the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The news about the clerical sex abuse crisis continues to sadden and capture the attention of Catholics around the world. This last week, the leaders of the U.S. bishops met with Pope Francis in Rome to discuss the McCarrick scandal. Cardinal Donald Wuerl of Washington has signaled his possible resignation, and a Vatican meeting on abuse was called for February, and yet another bishop is under investigation for sexual harassment. On Register Radio, we discuss all of those happenings, but we don't leave you with that darkness. We also want to turn our eyes to the light and the truth and beauty and goodness of our Lord. And so we take a look at a wonderful, magnificent Eucharistic procession that took place in Liverpool, England, as our second segment. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio. And as usual, I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor and co-host for Register Radio. Welcome, Matthew.
Oh, good to be with you.
Back in D.C.
Back in D.C., yeah.
Well, you're missing some very steamy weather down here in Birmingham.
I think it's slowly moving its way up to us. So.
Yes, with this tropical storm. So, Matthew, we've had a storm in the church these last several months. The summer really has brought us such intensity. And finally, there was this meeting in Rome that was long expected for a couple months now with Cardinal DiNardo. Meeting with Pope Francis. But before that, there were other things that were taking place, and it's stuff I really look forward to delving into with you. It's just you and I on this show. And so let's start with what happened at the very beginning of the week. The Council of Cardinals, this is what we call the C9 for short. It's a group of cardinals that was formed by Pope Francis to advise him. And they meet once or twice a year. They just met this week. And obviously, the sexual abuse crisis was top on their list of things to talk about. What came of that meeting?
Well, there were a couple things of immediate note from the meeting that sort of unrelated to the sex abuse crisis. There was some news that they're actually making considerable progress, apparently, in what's being called the new pastor bonus. And when I say pastor bonus, I'm referring to the old document that basically guided how the Roman Curia is supposed to be governed. Mm-hmm. That's significant because it ties directly into a lot of the reforms that Pope Francis is trying to launch, not just in the Holy See, but sort of across the whole church. That connects to the sex abuse crisis because one of the big questions that's been emerging of late is who's accountable to the Pope in terms of the bishops? Mm-hmm. Can the bishops be held accountable for so many of the things that we're hearing about? And so, obviously, one of the topics that emerged with the Council of Cardinals was the sex abuse crisis. Now, that becomes itself problematic because there are several members of the council who are facing allegations themselves or even trials right now, including George Pell in Australia, Cardinal Aracelis Ossa of Chile. Another prominent member, Oscar Rodriguez Maradiaga of Honduras, is under fire for his handling of his own auxiliary bishop who resigned under a cloud of homosexual scandal, his own seminaries, and their financial problems that, of course, Edward Penton, our Rome correspondent, has been doing such a great job of covering.
That's right. That's right. And one of those cardinals didn't actually make it to the council meetings this time. And we don't really know why, but it was a kind of last-minute pullout.
Yeah, well, there's a Cardinal Laurent Passigna couldn't make it. Now, he's older, so it's possible that there were health issues. But what's very clear is that this council as sort of emblematic of this pontificate, is itself struggling with the issue of clergy sexual abuse and mm-hmm. how the church is going to respond to it. So the statement that they issued as a body earlier this week, I thought was significant, in which they expressed solidarity with Pope Francis, that's right. but also this commitment to push ahead with some sort of a response to this crisis, in particular the now well-known letter of Archbishop Carlo Vigano, the former nuncio to the U.S., and his accusations against Pope Francis.
That's right. They said that they that we can expect a very specific response. And in fact, they called it clarifications, that, that the Holy See is about to formulate some necessary clarifications. And this was the news of September 10th. A Catholic news agency had a story on that, which we carried at the Register. And yeah, I half expected something to happen on Thursday when the Holy Father met with the U.S. bishops, but that did not happen. So we don't know when this clarification will actually happen, but it's been promised, and we do hope it addresses some of those specific allegations, and they said it would address some of Archbishop Vigano's clarification. So we still await that, and we'll see what happens. But there was also another announcement this week that was very important. It's the calling of all of the presidents of the bishops' conferences from around the world to come to Rome, to go to Rome in February. That's a pretty big deal.
In February, though, is what most people who first read the news kind of circled. They
right.
thought, okay, well, we'll come to that in a second. What Pope Francis is doing essentially is calling the 114 Episcopal conferences around the world, as well as I think there are about 21 or so different conferences or synods of the Eastern Catholic Churches to Rome. The official title, and this is where it started to get confusing from the start, the initial bulletino mentioned that it was to be for the protection of minors. Mm-hmm. So the question was then asked, well, what about vulnerable adults? What about the seminarians and where this crisis has really moved, especially in the wake of the McCarrick scandal? So that was then clarified. But then the questions began to emerge. Well, what are the dimensions of this? Are there going to be lay people involved, which is deemed by so many people as an absolute non-starter if they're not involved in some capacity? And is this going to address the question of episcopal accountability, which has become really one of the key issues in how the McCarrick scandal has unfolded and how we're going to deal with it?
Right. You know, it's interesting because we had that conversation last week with Stephen Beal about synods, you know, and the possibility some bishops were calling for a synod of bishops to talk about these topics. And, you know, at least a synod of bishops would have the experts who are lay people who are invited to discuss. But this is something totally different. I mean, this isn't a synod of bishops, although it is, you know, it's all bishops and cardinals who would be there. So it does raise those very important questions. And we have an answer about the adults, but we don't have an answer about how it will discuss bishop accountability, which is so much at the heart of what we're dealing with here.
And then there's the added little complexity of why it has to be held only in February.
Right. So far away is what you
so
mean.
So far away,
I mean,
and so
5 months, yeah.
The idea of an extraordinary synod, which is essentially what we're talking about, I'm not sure yet about the official designation from the Holy See, but the designation of this as a kind of extraordinary synod, by their definition, an extraordinary synod means that it is held in perhaps a moment of crisis or something that needs to be resolved quickly.
Right.
Stephen Beal's piece had some great points about that, as did Monsignor William King's piece, a canon lawyer who wrote also on this idea of an extraordinary synod of bishops, the need for speed in taking care of this.
Right.
It may be an extraordinary synod, but I don't see a lot of speed.
Right, exactly. And you know, it's funny, Monsignor King made the point that this should be a synod not for bishops, but about bishops. And I think that's the same point many people are making here when they hear of this meeting. Okay, this is all the bishops gathering, but this really needs to be about bishops. And so we'll see how that shapes up and if more information comes forward about what they'll be discussing. And I'm sure it will. I think it has obviously taken the Vatican some time to wrap their minds around how complex and how serious this issue is in the United States. It's not isolated to the United States, what we're dealing with over McCarrick. I mean, obviously, there's Chile had also had the problem of a lack of accountability among the bishops, and I think that's is the problem in many places. It's the news has come out in the UK over the same situation related to the bishops just not doing what they said they were going to be doing. Speaking of bishops, let me jump in. Keep going, and not jump in on myself. Speaking of bishops, speaking of U.S. bishops. Matthew, I don't know what I expected to happen on Thursday, but I expected a lot more to be said than what was said in the statement after the Pope's meeting with Cardinal DiNardo. What do you make of, well, first of all, what was said, and what do you make of it?
Well, what was said publicly was very little. It was barely six lines or so, two paragraphs, in which Cardinal DiNardo, in his capacity as president of the USCCB, or the Conference of Catholic Bishops, stressed his thanks to the Holy Father for meeting with them. He did say a couple of, I think, interesting things. He talked about the meetings as being fruitful. He said that they prayed together. But then he also made that last line there where he discusses the fact that they look forward to a discernment together. I looked at that word together as very key here in moving forward and finding solutions here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the implication is that Pope Francis and the Holy See will be involved in whatever the process is that follows. But in a way, it means that the ball is back in the court of the USCCB, and I would expect that the statements will be forthcoming in some fashion from the conference and moving forward, if for no other reason than if we have this thing in February and the bishops' meeting is in November, something has to happen between now and the bishops' meeting in November. Mm-hmm. There have to be some kinds of statements because the level of anger, of frustration, of just sheer emotion on the part of so many of the lay faithful.
Right.
I don't see how it would be tenable not to.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And it seems like Rome has been doing this on this issue, is just kind of pushing back on the U.S. Bishops and saying, okay, you guys need to come up with the plan. And that seems almost what has happened again here. We're with you, but you come up with the plan.
Well, and the sense of urgency is heightened now because we have the resignation, the retirement of Bishop Michael Bransfield of
that's right,
Wheeling, Charleston, West Virginia, but now an investigation into charges of sexual harassment against him, which I think is very significant because this is a clear sign that a lot of bishops are now going to be looked at, just ratcheting up even further the pressure on the USCCB, on the American hierarchy, but also on Rome.
That's absolutely right. And before we're out of time, I had mentioned in our intro about Cardinal Donald Worrell, of course, the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., who has signaled, he wrote a letter to his priest and said he's going to Rome and he's going to be talking to the Holy Father about resignation. And obviously he's over 75, so his resignation could be accepted at any time. And it just seems like there are a lot of signals that that is going to happen. We obviously don't know that for sure, but we'll keep watching, and we'll bring the news. All right. When we come back, we'll be talking to Register correspondent Joanna Bogle about a Eucharistic procession in Liverpool, England, and also a wonderful pilgrimage to Walsingham in England. This is Register Radio. More when we return.
Have you heard who's reading the Register? Why, it's Marcus Groda.
I believe EWTN's National Catholic Register is unique from other newspapers in that it not only is committed to reporting the news from the world and the church and our faith, but it does so through the lens of the faithfulness of our Catholic Church.
For a 3-month free subscription to the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 3 months free banner or call 1-800-421-3230.
EWTN Religious Catalog is your online destination for Catholic books, DVDs, rosaries, devotionals, and every purchase directly supports EWTN's mission. Ready to shop? Visit EWTNRC.com today.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host on Register Radio. And of course, we're joined by our next guest, Joanna Bogle, who is a Register contributor and who has had series on EWTN television. And Joanna, we're so glad to have you with us today.
It's great to be here.
So you've written a blog on the Register site recently, but I'm actually tapping you because you were at an event that I was very, very interested in, and it is this wonderful procession, Eucharistic procession, that I've seen these incredible pictures of thousands and thousands of people walking behind our Eucharistic Lord in the monstrance through the streets of Liverpool. And this happened last Sunday, right?
It certainly did. It was the climax of the National Eucharistic Congress, a magnificent event, and the first Eucharistic Congress to be held in Britain since 1908. That's 110
wow.
years ago. So 110 years after the last Eucharistic Congress was held in Britain, we held another, and it was a magnificent, enormous event, absolutely superb.
Oh, my goodness, what took them so long?
Well, I think, in fairness, you know, to world wars and so forth, a lot to do, and we've had rather different events in more recent years because we've had two papal visits and so on.
Right.
So I think that did sort of push the Eucharistic Congress idea further down the agenda. But I may be wrong about this, but I wondered whether nobody had noticed the anniversary in 2008. You know, these things can pass without one quite realizing it. And I think what happened is that somebody suddenly noticed as 2008 was over, sometime like about, I don't know, 2010 or something, it suddenly dawned on everyone, hey, there was this event 100 years ago. Okay, on the 110th anniversary, we'll do something. I think that's what happened, but I could be wrong. It was absolutely fantastic. The BBC reported 10,000 people
right.
taking part in the procession. And there's a huge arena in Liverpool called the Liverpool Echo Arena, one of these huge, enormous, modern, sort of modern Colosseum type thing.
Right.
And this great event was held there. And again, this great arena was completely filled. And this was every parish across England and Wales sent along a representative. I mean, it was an most enormous event. I mean, more than one representative. But, you
sure.
know, the idea was that every parish would be represented. And Bishop Robert Barron from America was the keynote speaker. It was all absolutely superb. Absolutely unforgettable. And I loved being there. It was difficult to convey just how exciting it was, because people kept just saying, isn't this amazing? Bishop Barron is, of course, a very well-known and very fine speaker, and he gave two excellent addresses. And there were a great many other activities. You name it. You could do everything over the 2 or 3 days. You could go to workshops on how to prepare children for First Communion.
Sure.
You obviously could go to Mass. You could go to confession. You could go to Mass in the Syro-Malabar Rite. You could do all sorts of things. And in the main arena, there were a number of very profound things, one of which was a presentation on the persecuted church. The International Catholic Charity did a very, very good presentation on, please give an hour to the Lord in adoration for those who can't, and those who are in prison. And they gave examples,
yeah.
and then they had people on screen saying, I'm going to Mass for, you know, Abdul somebody or other in Iraq who can't go, and there'd be a picture of this guy who's now in prison, that sort of thing. That was very impressive. And then on the Saturday night, I went along to Night Fever, which is Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament and Street Evangelization in Liverpool. Because as well as the main events in the arena, every parish in Liverpool, you know, had events going on, and there were just all sorts of other Catholic activities happening all across the city. And then the next day, starting with Mass in the cathedral, well, they had to have two Masses because there were just so many people.
Right.
But then there was this, and you had to get tickets for the Mass. I mean, a lot of people had to go to Mass elsewhere. You couldn't fit everybody into the cathedral. Then everyone joined in this enormous procession, and the Lord blessed us with an absolutely thundering downpour. It rained
right.
and rained and rained.
That's
it
what the pictures
say. It was real
say.
Lancashire. It was absolutely fabulous. And being British, nobody turned hair. We just kept on walking. And there's something completely absurd about this, but it's difficult to explain. But British people adore walking along in pouring rain doing something important. I mean, it's just completely fitted in.
Well, it's beautiful.
Had the most wonderful time.
The
yeah,
pictures.
It really was. I mean, it was just fantastic.
The Kevin Turley. Kevin Turley wrote a blog on the Register site about the event, and however, he wasn't there, so that's why I wanted to ask you, because you were there. And he has this picture. Somebody must have sent it to him, but this wonderful picture of small children kneeling in the rain. I mean, you can see they're kneeling in a puddle, basically, as the as the monstrance, the Holy Eucharist, passes, and of course it's canopied. But I can see no one is sheltering their heads. No one's holding umbrellas or anything. I mean, they're just walking in the rain, and here are these children kneeling. It's really an amazing image, and it's Joanna, one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this is we've been talking about such gloom in the church right now. We've been talking about the devastation of sexual abuse, and we need to focus also on the light that comes from the Eucharist, and that of course that's only it's the light that is also with us in the cross, of course, and and that's
one of the things that was emphasized. Of course, there was this extraordinary juxtaposition of ghastly news, probably more to come and so on. But one of the things that was emphasized was that we were not marching in triumph. We were walking as Archbishop McMahon, the Archbishop of Liverpool, at the big mass, which was celebrated by the Cardinal Archbishop, Cardinal Vincent Nichols, who's actually a Merseyside man. He comes originally from there, but is now the Archbishop of Westminster in London. But Archbishop McMahon preached at this mass, and he said, "We are walking with bowed heads. We are walking in penitence. But we are also walking erect because we walk in the light, you know, of the Lord." And Archbishop, Cardinal Archbishop Nichols made the same point the previous evening in the big arena where we finished with a time of adoration and benediction. Somehow that was all the more powerful for being in this great big arena, although the procession in the streets was so enormous and fantastic. But the arena thing, which wound up the day, was also amazing. And he said the same, we are in penitence. And there's a stage when you just have to pray a lot. I was going to say the only thing you can do is pray. That's a silly thing to say because prayer is the most important thing on each and every occasion. But really, there was this very profound sense. And if at times Catholic events have taken on a sort of tribal, gleeful, let's show the other people what we're like, gosh, aren't we wonderful, this was not such an occasion. This was not such an occasion, and maybe in the past, you know, recent past, Catholics have been a bit gleeful, aren't we clever, look at us, you know. I'm not saying we are like that, but it's more than likely that over the years we have been at various points, still maybe. This was a reminder, nope. We are a church of sinners, and we were praying. And that was all the more powerful. I think we all felt as well, we were very much concentrating on the Blessed Sacrament. Maybe the weather helped with that too, because if there had been a sense of, oh, I don't know, sort of sunshine and fun and meeting friends, and there's less inclination to do that when it's pouring with rain. Apart from the elves, you have to concentrate on what you're doing.
It's absolutely.
I could see, you know, I wear specs, and so, you know, the water was streaming down my glasses. So you have to be careful the way you're walking. Yes, of course, you go into puddles, you kneel in puddles, but somehow this added to the somber
absolutely
feeling.
Absolutely.
And then extraordinarily, it was necessary. And extraordinarily, as the procession finished, they go up the great steps of this huge, very modern cathedral. As you will probably know, Liverpool, of course, has two cathedrals, Anglican and Catholic. And the Catholic one, very, very, very modern, built in the 60s, and very, very, very large. It's the largest church in Britain in terms of pure size.
Okay.
So up the steps to this very modern building with this curious thing that everyone calls the Mersey funnel, which is on the top of it. Then the sun came out.
Oh, really?
It bathed everything in that extraordinary light you get after rain. And it was extremely powerful and very beautiful.
Yes.
And it gave the whole thing a halo-like luminous quality. I mean, really quite astonishing. And then the bells rang out and slowly...
And that's the image. That's the image we have on the top of our blog here. It's that image of the Eucharist being processed up the stairs, and you can just see the crowd. And yeah, you're right. It isn't raining in that image. The canopy isn't there, and
the
that's what we
looks
can.
A lot bigger than 10,000.
it probably is, right? It probably is.
Yeah,
but
it's very difficult to tell because obviously they knew it was the numbers in the arena because everybody had to have a ticket and a seat, you know. But with the procession, well, first some people had to go home because they had home duties in their own parish, that would apply to a number of the priests. But an awful lot more people then, of course, turned up, because a lot of people who hadn't booked for the Congress, or it didn't work for them, or they couldn't come for the whole weekend, but they all came for the procession. And, of course, in Liverpool, every parish would turn out for the procession. So there were huge numbers of people involved, all told. It was a very, very, very big event. And Catholics are so used to sneering at anything we ourselves do. We've got into a big self-hatred thing at the moment, you know. And there's this idea, whatever the bishops do is useless. This is not so. This is not so. There are fantastic and glorious things happening in the church, and this was one of them. And, I found it much more powerful and moving.
Well, Joanna, we have just 2 minutes left, and I wanted to point to at least your blog that was written on September 8th, and this is another walk. I don't think it was quite as big, but and it's a walk that happens every year. This is the Pilgrim's Walk to Walsingham. So quickly, tell us about the walk to Walsingham.
This is the John Paul Walk, started the year after he died by the wonderful Dominican sisters in the New Forest in Hampshire. And we walk, it's only a small group of us, but we walk all the way to Walsingham, 20 miles a day for the first 2 days, and about 12 miles on the last day, in the most fabulous countryside. It couldn't be more different from Liverpool. It's Norfolk. The shrine is about 6 miles from the North Sea. And it was boiling hot. I mean, sizzling sunshine, too hot, really. But it was fabulous. Young Dominican priests giving us talks on the way, lots of young people, and I got the most shocking blisters. But there you are. And the shrine has been there since 1061. That's 5 years before the Norman conquest. All those years of prayer. Bit of a break with Henry VIII, but all rebuilt now, and a fabulous experience. And one of the things we were praying about was a great new revival in our country. Pray God that He will listen to our prayers for our beloved country.
Amen. Well, thank you for talking about these two very important events. These are events of our faith, and they help us to stay wedded to the actions of our faith and to the belief. Mm. While we have to act in other ways, we have to speak up to our bishops and ask them for change and really work for that with them. This is also the deepest way that we can be united with Christ in His church. So, Joanna, I'm completely grateful that you have brought this to us, and grateful to Kevin Turley. His blog is called England's Eucharistic Congress and the Exaltation of the Holy Cross. And Joanna's blog is In Hot Sunshine and Barren Culture, Pilgrim's Walk to Walsingham. So, Joanna, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Good night.
Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. And there you can find our podcast. So look for the archives and listen to more shows. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you, and pray for us, please.